From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 4th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Programming note, tune in for a live election night coverage Tuesday, November 5th, from 7 to 8 p.m. We're going to be on South Carolina Public Radio over the airwaves and on the TV, South Carolina ETV. Now, we're only doing from 7 to 8, but you can pick up PBS NewsHour's coverage as well as NPR's coverage after that. It's going to be wall-to-wall, folks. Tune in, get some great analysis results, and no commercials, no fluff, just the news. Happy Election Day. On this episode of The Lead,
America votes.
It is Election Day in America. The polls open at 7 a.m. and close at 7 p.m. in South Carolina if you're listening on Election Day, Tuesday, November 5th. Now, we look at where things stand right now and what some pastors from across the state and ideological beliefs were preaching from the pulpit on Sunday. Give you a little religion here, folks. Sunday on a Tuesday. Huh? Wait, some angels? Thank you. We also look at which counties have sales tax referendums on the ballot and what down ballot races look like. And of course, we have closing arguments from our two senators. That's right. Check it out. We got a whole episode for you today. Now, no episode would be complete without hearing from you, our loyal listeners, at 803-563-7169. We're going to have a wind down. We have some takes. We have some discussions that we're going to be having. And we want you to be a part of those in the future. And you can do that by calling 803-563-7169. It's just like voting, folks. You have to do it. Here's the scene setter for you, folks. It is Election Day 2024. The race is a dead heat in America, with polls in all seven of the major swing states either putting Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump in a tie with each other or within the poll's margin of error. Translation: it's gonna be a minute until we know who wins the election. In 2020, it took until that Saturday after the election for the Associated Press to call a winner based on the returns. No telling when that will be this time. So take a breath. Enjoy. Just lean into the anxiety all week, folks. This is the void that we are now in. Welcome. Hey, I'm here too. We're all here. Some details on what's at stake and where things stand right now, this courtesy of the New York Times. Kamala Harris is clearly favored in states that account for 226 electoral votes, while Donald Trump is favored in states that account for 219. To win, Harris will likely need at least 44 combined electoral votes from the seven battleground states, and he will need 51.
Data!
There are 93 electoral votes in play in those seven swing states. But let's go to Congress. The Senate does not look good for Democrats. They currently have 51 Democratic senators, meaning they can only lose one seat and retain control in a Harris presidency. That's because the vice president breaks the 50-50 Senate ties. But Democrats are vulnerable in several states. West Virginia is all but lost because of Joe Manchin retiring. In Montana, John Tester, the Democratic incumbent, is trailing by 8 points in the most recent Times Siena College poll. Other seats we're watching in the Senate? Democrats like Sherrod Brown in Ohio and Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin are also in tight races. To keep Senate control, Democrats would need to win all those races but West Virginia or pull off at least one upset elsewhere. Their best hopes are in either Texas, where Colin Allred, a House Democrat, is only a few points behind Ted Cruz, or Nebraska, where Dan Osborne, an industrial mechanic who's running as an independent, is trying to unseat Deb Fischer, the Republican incumbent. Now, Osborne's views on the economy and abortion suggest he will often side with Democrats. So Republicans are looking optimistic to take over the Senate. In the House, incumbent House Republicans must defend 17 seats in districts that Biden won 4 years ago. Only five House Democrats are running in districts that Trump won. All six South Carolina Republican House districts and one Democratic district are expected to maintain the status quo. That is how it's done here. And some referendums to watch. 10 states will vote on the issue of abortion, including six red and purple states, Arizona, Florida, Missouri, Montana, Nevada, and Nebraska, that are considering measures that would allow abortion until fetal viability. Florida's version needs 60% support to pass. There are other issues on the ballots across the country, including marijuana, school choice, minimum wage increases, affordable housing funding, and ranked choice voting, among others. In South Carolina, we only got one ballot referendum. And that just asks you whether to approve or disapprove of new wording for Section 4, Article 2 of the Constitution of South Carolina, which reads, "Every citizen of the United States and of this state of the age of 18 and upwards who is properly registered is entitled to vote as provided by law." The referendum asks for it to be changed to, quote, "so as to provide that only a citizen of the United States and of this state of the age of 18 and upwards who is properly registered is entitled to vote as provided by law." So changing it to only, really reinforcing that only U.S. citizens can vote, which is the law.
Interesting.
So that's the status quo here in South Carolina, but that's a broad state of play right now on Election Day 2024. But we have more.
Wow.
Yeah. You heard us talking about this in our live lead taping episode, but I want to continue our look at a few of the statehouse races that are in play. Yes, non-status quo, including some of the Senate races that could give Republicans, who already hold 30 seats in the 46-seat chamber, a super majority that would allow them to set priorities and pass bills without any need for Democratic support. You know, getting rid of a filibuster, for example. Though the Republican caucus is not monolithic, this would certainly help. Now, Myon Schechter has this report on some down ballot races we're watching.
It goes around and all the way back out to the road in two different spots out there.
That's incredible.
We thought so.
On the first day of early voting, the turnout at the Lexington County Voter Registration Office is eyebrow-raising. There are cars wrapped around the building, stretching onto a busy thoroughfare. That's on top of the line of voters heading into the office, which grows every minute. Many in line say they know exactly who they plan to vote for president. That's why they've shown up. But how will the surge in turnout, now more than 54,000 early voters in Lexington, affect races for state and local offices in this Republican-leaning Midlands county, a part of which includes one of the few competitive state Senate contests in South Carolina?
Do you happen to know which Senate district you might be in?
I do not. I know I'm here in Lexington.
I'm not sure because I moved recently.
Do you know which state Senate district you might be in?
No, I don't. I'm going to go straight Republican.
The election is on Tuesday, and South Carolina, a reliable red state, is poised to go to former President Trump for a third time. Trump's strength at the top of the ticket has Democrats especially anxious. 4 years ago, they lost 5 seats in the General Assembly. 2 years later, Republicans clinched a supermajority in the House of Representatives after flipping more seats, some in traditional Democratic districts. If Democrats lose a single Senate seat next week, the GOP will have a supermajority in both chambers. For State Democratic Party Chairwoman Crystal Spain, what victory looks like on Election Day this year is clear.
That is victory for us if we pick those seats up, and it's victory if we help to stave off the Republicans in the Senate. They're trying to knock out some of our incumbent senators, and if we're able to protect those senators, that is victory for us this cycle.
Back in Lexington, Democrats are trying to hold on to a seat that the GOP has been eyeing for years. With the loss of 2 veteran senators, Democrats in this district that also includes parts of Calhoun and Richland counties hope voters here elect Democratic House Representative Russell Ott over GOP newcomer Jason Gary. Due to new district lines drawn by the GOP-controlled legislature, most statehouse contests are decided in the June party primaries. That leaves few competitive races for November, making their outcome critical for Democrats. After 2 cycles of major upsets, Democrats are playing aggressive defense. So with Trump on the ticket and a state turning more red, that leaves state Republican Party Chairman Drew McKissick feeling confident and able to spread more resources in parts of the state that the party has slowly been picking apart for years.
Well, pickups, I'm on the record saying we'll pick up at least 2 state Senate seats and 2 state House seats.
Where exactly, McKissick won't say, but based on past turnout, there are signs of where the party hopes to solidify its base, like in Clarendon, Darlington, Fairfield, and Sumter counties, home to areas with at least 4 other competitive Senate races. Even in blue Richland County, where Republicans are hoping to take back a Columbia-area swing district that the party lost in the 2022 midterms to Democrat Heather Bauer, who ran almost entirely on abortion rights.
Every vote matters. I won by just over 200 votes last time. It's going to be just as close this time.
So every vote truly does matter. If you think it doesn't, watch my race from back in 2022.
It's why Democrats statewide have pushed early vote turnout so hard, and it's why Republicans are leaning in this year, too.
In addition to these races, there may also be a sales tax referendum on your ballot. That's right, tens of billions of dollars are at stake for infrastructure improvements around the state in the form of the penny sales tax. Many are up for renewal that will continue a funding stream for improving roads, bridges, water, and sewer projects, among others, as a supplement to state and federal money that can be hard to secure. Other counties are looking to implement one for the first time this year. Voters in the following counties are being presented with a renewal of their 1% sales tax, including Aiken, Allendale, Barnwell, Charleston, Chesterfield, Greenwood, McCormick, Orangeburg, Richland, and York. The following counties are proposing a new 1% sales tax for capital projects. They include Anderson, Beaufort, Georgetown, Greenville, Horry, Jasper, Lancaster, and Sumter. So we will see who gets a penny on their sales tax. Now, this tax remains in place for a period of time depending on each jurisdiction, and it ranges from 7 years to 15 years. You can see if there's one on your ballot by getting your sample ballot at scvotes.org and reading the measure before you vote, because they're kind of long. They take time. Okay, I'm going to take you to church. I know we have a strict separation of church and podcast here, but we're gonna break it. We're going to find some religion. I just think this segment will be interesting to everyone, so give it a shot. Give it a listen. It's a little long, but you can hear what some of the pastors are talking about on the Sunday before Election Day. Now, while the candidates have been making their final pitches to voters over the last few days, pastors, like I said, across the state have been doing the same from the pulpit to their own flocks, some more directly than others. South Carolina is part of the so-called Bible Belt. That's a group of 9 or so southern states, including the swing states of Georgia and North Carolina, where attendance at Christian churches in the Belt exceed that of the national average. And it's also home to conservative Protestant values. Now, not all Christian churches are the same, of course, and I'm not going to get into all the denominations, the schisms, the theological differences, the pros and cons, all of them. But thanks to the advent of technology, I didn't have to go to all these churches. In fact, I watched a lot of this on their live streams. But there are some ground rules for churches, specifically IRS Code 501c3, which restricts the speech of nonprofit tax-exempt entities, such as churches. That means this prevents churches from directly participating in or intervening in any political campaigns on behalf of any candidate for elective office. We're talking no endorsements from the pulpit, but as a private citizen, pastors can make those endorsements. Pastors can talk about hot-button issues and even have candidates speak in church, though it's never overtly political in message, as far as I've seen. And you can hear that fine line in this robocall that Reverend Charles Jackson Sr. and Reverend Charles Jackson Jr. of Brooklyn Baptist Church in West Columbia and Northeast Columbia recorded. That was played before the congregation on Sunday and has also played on the airwaves.
This is Charles Jackson Sr., senior pastor at Brooklyn Baptist Church, coming to you as a concerned citizen.
And this is Charles Jackson, Jr., co-pastor at the Brookland Baptist Church, and I, too, come to you as a concerned citizen. We are reaching out to you today to encourage you to value your vote and vote your values in the November election.
Generations fought to ensure our right to vote. It is now our responsibility to make sure our voices are heard. Campaigns full of misinformation and disinformation are designed to make us tune out and stay home.
But let's push back. If we want a better and brighter future, we're going to have to take it into our own hands by casting our ballots. We have a chance right now to send a message that will change lives for generations to come.
Make plans to vote Tuesday, November the 5th, when polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
If you need more information, visit scvotes.gov. That's scvotes.gov. Thank you for your time, and please remember to vote. Vote, vote, vote. Come on, let's give God a hand clap of praise for the opportunity that we have to be responsible citizens and participate
in a very critical election. We wanted to make sure that we put that out this morning so that persons around this country would be able to hear that statement of how critical we feel this election is. I'll tell you like Spike Lee said, just do the right thing, y'all. Do the right thing.
Over at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Columbia, the governor's home church, there was a more pointed, though still legally vague enough message to the flock from Dr. Neil Stewart, who grew up in Northern Ireland and has preached throughout the South since the early 2000s. He let his flock know they are all welcome and should vote their conscience before God.
We often are thought, you know, we think together, both of the candidates who face us are seriously flawed for different reasons and in different ways. And so we either think, well, I'm not going to vote at all, or we think, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I want to challenge you this morning to think, rather than voting for the lesser of two evils, is to think not so much of the candidates, but of the kind of government they say they will implement, and which government will work to lessen evil in this land. Don't think of voting for the lesser of two evils. Which government will lessen evil? And to do that, we have to think about the purpose of government in God's world. And to do that, we're going to look at Romans 13, and then 1 Timothy 2. I want to try to kind of help you think through three big issues that face America at this particular political moment. And we can summarize them under those famous words, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Which government do you believe, honestly before God, will best protect the life, the liberty, and the rights of Americans to pursue happiness as God defines it? Which is always connected to holiness, of course, as you will remind me. And if the government fails to protect these three basic rights, because you could talk about, you know, well, what about international politics? What about the border and all those things? If the government fails to protect the rights of life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness, whatever America they build won't be worth protecting from the predations of Iran, China, North Korea, and Russia.
Smash cut to Shandon Presbyterian Church, also in Columbia, a little bit different theologically. This one is led by Reverend Jenny McDevitt, who invited Dr. Jacqueline Lapsley, who's the president of Union Presbyterian Seminary in Richmond. She was there to speak before the congregation, where she focused more on drawing some parallels between All Saints Day and Election Day.
I don't know if you're like me, but you're probably thinking a lot about the big day. Maybe you have some anxiety about it. What's your approach? Is it to learn as much as you can about what's being said about the big day? Or is it to block all that out and to lean into some favorite distractions? The World Series, football, go Gamecocks. Wow, big game last night. Or maybe it's your distraction is extreme exercise or cooking apps. Or if you're like me, it's word games, Wordle, spelling bee. Don't get between me and my spelling bee. However you are handling it, most of us wonder what the big day means for us. Of course, I'm talking about All Saints Day, which is today. These things may seem disconnected. Election anxiety and a day in which we give glory to God for the ordinary holy lives of the believers in every age. I'm not diminishing election anxiety. It's real. I feel it. But I think there's a connection between these two big events this week.
Up in Lawrence, South Carolina, at Chestnut Ridge Baptist Church, Reverend Alex Henderson only focused on the election for a few minutes out of his very long service on Sunday.
What are some of the things Satan has us chasing around today? I'm just going to give you a couple because I don't have a lot of time today. But here's the first one. We are all experiencing this right this minute. You know what Satan's got the church chasing today? He has reduced, if I can say it this way, he's reduced the church to politics. Now, don't get me wrong. Listen to me carefully. You have a right and a responsibility as a citizen of this nation, and you have a right and a responsibility as a child of God to participate in the political system. I'm not telling you not to participate in the political system. I voted 10 days ago, probably. I'm not telling you not to vote. I'm telling you absolutely to vote. I'm telling you to go vote and vote your biblical convictions. You say, preacher, who'd you vote for? I didn't vote for either one of them. I voted for a set of biblical convictions that I have, and one of them more closely aligned than the other one. I tell people this all the time. They both going to take you the wrong way. One of them's just going to go a lot faster than the other one. So what do you do when you can't vote for anybody? You vote biblical convictions. I've been voting my biblical convictions for years. Because it's been a long time since I could walk into a voting booth and pull a lever for President of the United States and feel comfortable about that person from top to bottom. But that didn't keep me from voting. I still vote my biblical convictions. But Satan's got us in the church. He's reduced the church down to politics. Listen to me this morning. If we got as passionate about the King of Kings as we are about who the President of the United States is, the world would be in a far, far different place. The church would be in a far, far different place. And you and I as believers would be in a far, far different place if we were as passionate about the King as we are about the President.
Down at Royal Missionary Baptist Church in North Charleston, Pastor Isaac Holt, who had then-Senator Kamala Harris before his congregation back when she was running in 2020, had this message to his flock.
We got a big election Tuesday. How many know there was an election Tuesday? Okay. How many didn't know, raise your hand? I don't blame you. I wouldn't raise my hand either. Amen. But we got a big election Tuesday, probably the biggest one of your lifetime. The difference and the consequences are so drastic, we can't determine. They keep saying it's a dead heat, it's a tie. I don't know how they come up with that. They always say that. But one thing about it, if you vote, you win. If you vote, you win. You vote at your choice. If your candidate wins, you still win. If your candidate doesn't win, you still win because you vote at your choice. That's the beauty of a democracy, and I've been all over the world in the Navy, and believe me, with all of its flaws, with all of its problems, America is still the best.
And of course, some of our politicians were also making closing arguments on the weekend shows. In fact, Senator Tim Scott gave Senator Lindsey Graham a break this weekend and hopped on CNN's State of the Union with Dana Bash, who asked Scott about Steve Bannon's statement that Trump should just declare victory on election night regardless of the outcome, as well as Trump, who was also spreading false claims. Listen to this exchange.
I would never tell any candidate on the ballot to talk about what happens if they lose. Obviously, you're going to lean into the victory, especially
when the latest polls in battleground states says that you're running forward. I appreciate that, Senator. Forgive me, but spreading false rumors.
You're running ahead of your candidate.
Totally.
Listen,
but saying false things about fraud.
Totally disagree on this one.
Is not. You think it's okay to spread false rumors about fraud and undermine the integrity of the election, regardless of what happens?
Dana, the liberal media has done a better job of spreading misinformation
than any
candidate I've seen so far. That's true. Listen, here's the fact. We're not seeing the coverage of two assassination attempts on CNN against Donald
Trump.
We're not seeing the comments about Kamala Harris talking about fascists, calling Donald Trump a fascist.
John Kelly called him a fascist.
We should focus on
his former chief of staff.
The opportunity, giving, and she repeated it, giving people the
opportunity to make their own decisions. Wouldn't you, if Kamala Harris's former chief of staff called her a fascist, I would guess that you would repeat it too. And Donald Trump has called him one as well.
A bit heated there. Congressman Jim Clyburn was on MSNBC's Politics Nation, but I couldn't find a clip online, so we don't have it for you. Though you could reference my previous interviews with him, I think he said pretty similar things. And you thought Senator Graham wouldn't be on the podcast. Well, he is. I met up with him in Walhalla last week, where he voted early. That's Oconee County, his home county. And I asked him about his concerns for potential violence as a result of the election. Here's what he said.
I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I'm going to do what I did last time. Take every allegation seriously, call around, check it out for myself. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I believe my job in Washington is not to override the states unless there's some darn good reason. We believe here in America that the state should run elections. I believe that. Whatever they say in Georgia and North Carolina, our neighbors, you know, that will mean a lot to me. You just can't have a handful of people in Washington overturning an election unless something really is fundamentally wrong. And the vice president and the Congress, I understand what our role is, and that is to sort of check the homework, but not set as some giant body. you know, overruling an election.
Graham said he is optimistic Trump will win, but he is nervous. Graham had just gone off the campaign trail in Ohio and Michigan and said he was heading back out this week. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. Boy, do we really need a break from the news, AT Shire lead producer.
As you said earlier, because I whispered it in your ear while you were saying it, we're in the void. We're all the way in the void.
I thought that was your voice. Yep. There's so many up here right now.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's bad.
Who was that?
Yep, that was Ball. Or what is it from The Exorcist? Pazuzu. It was Pazuzu.
I wanted to watch The Exorcist.
Gavin, he knew that the preacher was outside.
Oh, my God. Not making an Exorcist reference. We're just talking about all of our pastors.
Anyway. Oh, God. I didn't even realize.
We can exercise this wind down section
sure,
a little bit.
I'll bleep it for the first minute and a half. Anyway, Gavin, we got a call. Are you ready for the call?
Yes.
Okay.
Take me to the void.
Here we go. More void.
Avoid the noid void.
Avoid the void. Yes. Here we go.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew down in Mount Pleasant. Just checking in one day before Election Day. Wanted to say that thanks in large part to y'all broadcasting the need for more election poll workers. I will be serving as a poll manager in my district tomorrow. This is my first time doing it, but I'm excited. Hoping for a nice, you know, calm day and seeing a lot of good turnout. But we'll see what happens. Check back in with me tomorrow night, and hopefully I'll have a good report. Thanks so much. Bye.
Andrew, look at you.
Look at you.
Congratulations.
Hey, here we go.
Thank you for volunteering. Thank you for serving. That's awesome. But you definitely have to check back in with us. You have to let us know.
We're almost requiring you. If you don't, I may text you back from the hotline.
Yes.
Because I do want to get filled back in about how that goes for you. Any wild stories? Or is it like just a sleepy little votey day?
Because there is a lot of people getting hopped up about, you know, what they can wear to the polls. You have to be aware, folks.
We're not making this up. You can't wear it, you know? We're so sorry.
State law dictates that you just can't wear a button, a hat, a shirt that has a candidate's name on it. Just don't do it, guys. Let's just give these poll workers a break. They're busy enough.
Yeah, people like Andrew are taking time out of their day. They live near you. They can't work it. Like they said, you can't work it unless you live there. Mm-hmm. So come on. Cut them some break. These are literally your neighbors.
I'm excited to go vote on Election Day.
I'm also a little stoked, yeah.
Andrew, also, if you get any of those extra I voted stickers, you know where to send them.
Yeah, you can.
You know what I do with mine? Blah, blah, blah. I put them in my car's console. They're like decomposing in my console. Right? Yeah. I have like a bunch of them.
You let them rot there. You let them rot there.
It's just such a flex for me. Like, oh, this? Oh, I just keep it right here.
Oh, me? I vote all the time.
You know, in case I get pulled over and I need to like, you know, flex my democracy creds.
It's a PBA.
Oh, all these, officer? Yeah, no.
It's a Police Benevolency Association card. I'll be getting out of that.
I pull my license and registration. All these I voted stickers fall.
This guy.
He's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I pulled over the wrong guy.
Yeah. I keep one in my wallet so everyone sees.
Oh, this? I just always vote.
I leave him his tip. I don't even give money anymore.
I'm so pissed.
Yeah, like you'll find that this is worth more than money, okay?
I think you understand the deeper meaning here.
Yeah, okay.
No, but I do enjoy voting on Election Day. Like, we saw a huge turnout, obviously, with everyone voting early. That's awesome. But Election Day, that's my jam. Especially if, like, what, 1.5 million people already voted? There aren't going to be many lines at my voting precinct.
I'm hoping that is the case. With the massive early turnout, I was looking at that and banking on an easy in, easy out. I'll report back here.
Yes.
I got to drop Rena off and then go vote and then get to work.
Oh, you can't bring her with you?
I don't think I want to.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
She'll be younger.
When she can stand on her own, then maybe she should come.
Cute,
you know?
Little photo, and she's like, oh, no. Mm-hmm, and they'll be like, don't let her touch the touchscreen. She's not registered.
That's
she can't
right.
do that.
Yeah, I'm a rule follower. She won't touch it, okay?
She'll probably pick some other one.
She'll vote everybody.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm looking forward to voting on Election Day. I've never had to wait a long line, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting, and I'm going to take a first-time voter to the poll, too.
Make sure to tag us, okay?
Yeah, guys, send us your pictures. Send us your I voted sticker pictures. We'll put them on Twitter. We're going to be readjusting our social media presence in the new year, but we still want to see your photos.
Worst case scenario, text them to the hotline number.
803-563-7169.
We can aggregate them and get our social media team to share them out.
And we'll put them on the website, South Carolina Public Radio.org.
We're stoked about it. Call in. Let us know how it's going for you. This is the day of days. Everything has been up to this.
Years.
It literally is the end of
years.
It.
I know. It's kind of crazy.
All those political commercials, they're going to slow down after this. You're going to be able to go on YouTube. You're going to be able to watch TV.
And then a new anxiety will be open for you.
Then 2028 regardless. Starts. Then 2028 starts, okay? All right, Gavin. Let them go.
Deep breaths, guys.
This is it.
This is it.
This is the last you're going to hear from us before, after, until it happens.
It's going to happen.
It's happening to us.
This is pre, and then we'll be post.
Yep.
Okay?
Well, on the other side of the void.
Post.
We'll be out of the void by then.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Hopefully, we're out of the void.
Yeah, let us know. Give us a shout from the void, 803-563-7169. Let us know about your Election Day experience. Maybe you're volunteering like Andrew. That's awesome. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys, 803-563-7169. And we still have some calls in the hopper regarding espresso, that Mia Espresso and Sabrina Carpenter. Don't worry, we'll be getting to that. That's a huge topic that we will be addressing post-void. You can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org, and don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. America's going to be doing that on Tuesday.
That's right. That is correct. Yes.
So, have you guys ever seen Midsummer?